This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Alhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in amma ba'd. Last time, the discussion was about the signs of a qualified sheikh, and obviously they gave the absolute optimal option, which is very, very difficult to generally find, but the best that you find, you go with them. So page 31 is where we are, and he discusses here congeniality with the sheikh, right? Congeniality with the sheikh. Experience has proven that in order to gain spiritual benefit, i.e. fuyud batini, right, inner benefit, then mutual congeniality, which they call munasaba, right, between the sheikh and disciple is a necessary condition. If you feel any kind of hiccup, that is going to stop your benefit. If you feel any kind of resistance or obstacle or difficulty in communication, then you can't really benefit, right? Normally, benefit is dependent upon affection, which is the reality of natural congeniality, which is munasaba fitriya. If you can have a natural affinity with somebody, then that's even better. Sometimes a sheikh will refer a seeker to another sheikh because of the lack of such congeniality between them. Like, I can't deal with you. Maybe you need more time and I don't have the time to give. Or you misunderstand things, or I misunderstand you. Or either way, if you're genuine and sincere, it's like, okay, you know what? It's not going to work. Let me go to this individual. He should be of great benefit. In doing so, the sheikh establishes either by deduction or divine inspiration that the seeker has congeniality with a certain sheikh. So you can either just get that, look, I think there's going to be more munasaba with him. He deals with that more. For example, sometimes what happens is that a sheikh will be more focused on the spiritual side only. So if there's somebody who comes who is more technical, more academically inclined, they gonna feel that this person won't respect me as much, because there's some people who are academic, they just don't respect anybody else unless they're academic as well. They just can't see through that. That's why what's most amazing is that Qasim Nanoti Sahab, Maulana Qasim Nanoti, Maulana Rashid Ahmed, Maulana Shari, I mean, look how academic they were, but they went to Haji Imdadullah, who was not even a full alim. But I guess his spirituality was probably so powerful that all of that was just overlooked, right? And they just went beyond that and he became their sheikh, right? He's considered the sheikh al-ta'ifa because he's obviously not the first sheikh, but he is the sheikh from whom this all sprouted in the subcontinent. Before that, there was Sheikh Nizamuddin Awliya, there was Bakhtiyar Ka'ki Rahimahullah, many other great shuyukh, but then there'd been a lull for a long time. So then suddenly Haji Imdadullah comes on the scene. There's this whole British thing going on, occupation of India, freedom movement. And then, mashallah, these Maulana Qasim, Maulana Shaykh Al-Gahangir, Maulana Ashraf Ali Thanvi, and Maulana Khalilam, all of these, they suddenly, mashallah, they come in the field and they've just produced so much. This whole Dilban movement comes up. And that's why he's called Sayyid al-Ta'ifa, because so many people benefited from him, right? These people, much more. He was from Tanaban. He actually sent Maulana Ashraf Ali Thanvi back to Tanaban from where he was teaching in, I forget which town he was teaching in, which village, which madrasa he was teaching in. He sent him back there to revive the Khanqa, because Tanaban had become desolate after the British destruction of it, after the Muslims from there. And I'm going to be talking about this soon somewhere, that they resisted the British there, because that was the center point of that. The British came and just destroyed that whole area, and then they had to lay low because they were constantly under watch. But Maulana Haji Imdadullah, after he'd migrated to Makkah Mukarramah, he sent Maulana Ashraf Ali Thanvi there and said, look, don't worry. And mashallah, Maulana Ashraf Ali Thanvi's work just took off and brought Tanaban back into the picture, alhamdulillah. And there were a number of other great sheikhs from that area as well. So in this path, it is essential that congeniality exists between the sheikh and seeker. Otherwise, the latter will not benefit. Such congeniality is the basis for the acquisition of benefit and passing the spiritual grace of the disciple. It could also be possible that sometimes, you know, you may have a certain fiqhi preference, fiqhi opinions and inclination. And while the sheikh closest to you might be there and accessible and so on, but you know that you differ quite a bit. And not all shuyukh, because they're all human beings and individuals, have the same wus'a and dharf and broadness of allowing flexibility within that and having a difference of opinion. Maulana Abul Hassan Ali Nadwi, sorry, Maulana Rashid Amangar had very different opinions, fiqh perspective and bid'at perspective from Maulana Haji Imdadullah. But they, and it's very interesting the way he even became a murid and a khalifa. Maulana Rashid had actually come to Tanabon for a debate or something, a discussion or a debate. And he said, there's a Haji Imdadullah here, let me go meet him. So he went to meet him, and they just so hit it off together as such that he said, look, just go tomorrow. And go tomorrow, or I'll go tomorrow. Each one of them, like someone is like, just go tomorrow. Or Maulana Sheikh Al-Gangoi would say, chalo, I'll stay here today, I'll go tomorrow. 40 days passed like that, or a bit more. And then at the end of it, he finally had to go, right? And then he just got khilafat straight away. So they just hit it off. And he'd gone there just incidentally, right? He'd gone there for something, for some other purpose. And then it's kind of interesting how he started his khanqah there in the middle of nothing, because Gangor had Maulana Abdul Quddus Gangohi before him some time back. And his khanqah had been there, but then had lost, had been... So he's the one who kind of, you can say, revived Gangor to be a center. That's what happens. Certain places have a sheikh and then that sheikh dies out. Nobody's there from the murids or khulafa that's strong enough to draw people there. There's going to be somebody there, but they're going to kind of lose their attraction unless they're very strong. There's very few cases where the son or the next khalifa actually does a really great job. It doesn't always happen, right? That's why they lose and then somebody else... No, there's always a khalifa generally that does. Like after Sheikh al-Hadith Mana Zakaria, the next person probably that was known to be kind of the stand-in or the deputy, the main deputy, well, they had multiple, but probably the one par excellence must have been Mufti Mahmud al-Hassan Gangohi. Obviously, in England, it was Hazrat Mawlana Yusuf Sahib, rahimahullah, for, you know, with hands down, Mawlana Bilal Sahib and Mawlana Hashim Sahib, they're also khulafa, but they were always under him. There was no doubt about that. But I think in overall Mufti, and he used to really respect Mufti Mahmud as well. Sheikh Yunus became more popular for his hadith dars as opposed to becoming being a khalifa of him, and so on. For Mawlana Thanwi, there were multiple. We didn't see the early period. They were great ones. I mean, with Mawlana Thanwi, everyone is a great one. I mean, I'm amazed by this individual. When you look at the khulafa, they've all been accepted for the service of his deen. Mawlana Thanwi's khulafa, Mawlana Masihullah Khan Sahib, how much work he's done, Mawlana Abrarul Haq Sahib, then Mawlana Khair Muhammad Jalindri Sahib, doing translation of the Quran, that madrasa in Lahore is, you know, is connected to him. There's Lahore or Multan, he's done a translation. Mawlana Abdul Majid Daryabadi, Sayyid Sulaiman Nadwi, who else? I mean, some of the biggest names. No, he's a Khalifa Mawlana Abrarul Sahib. He's a grand student, right? Although he became very popular, probably even more popular than Mawlana Abrarul Haq Sahib in a sense. But there's just loads of them, and they're just all amazing. They're just absolutely all amazing. Mufti Shafi Sahib is another one. And Mawlana Zafar Thanwi, obviously, all of these were his special students and nephew as well. It's just amazing, right? How much he managed to affect so many different people, multiple people who did so much work, right? I just don't have it all in my mind right now, but that's probably been one of the most successful ones, right? They were proper because he had a very, very rigid routine and very particular, right? He was very transparent, very particular. So anyway, I don't know how we got onto that subject. You're saying, yeah, sometimes you may not have a congeniality. There may be the greatest sheikh there, but you know that if you're going there, you might have to give up certain things, or you may have some differences of opinion. And not everybody has that openness, right? So that's why they might find somebody else. So that's kind of the congeniality you're speaking about. Sometimes you'd be surprised by certain shuyukh. If you read Hazrat Sheikh or Unke Khulafa, right, which is what Hazrat told me to read once, it's the story of all the Khulafa of how they met. If you look at Maulana Abdul Hafiz Makki, he didn't agree with all of this stuff. And then he went to ask certain questions of Hazrat Sheikh, and Hazrat Sheikh just responding to him in a really open way. I was like, oh, wow. And then that's it. He just took it on, right? It was, yeah, that's how it is. You need to have that congeniality with the Sheikh. In this path, it is essential that congeniality exists between the Sheikh and the seeker. Otherwise, the latter will not benefit. The Sheikh will not benefit. He won't do his job properly. He won't be able to do his job properly. Such congeniality is the basis for the acquisition of benefit and passing of spiritual grace to the disciple. Congeniality entails that there exists between the Sheikh and disciple compatibility and harmony to such a degree that the disciple discerns no rejection in his heart for any word or act of the Sheikh, even though the disciple may at times be afflicted by mental disagreement with any word or act. You're going to have that. Tells you to do something. Oh man, that's tough. I can't. Why is he telling me to do that? Doesn't he get it? He's being favorable to the other murid or something like that. That act, you know, the whole thing of having lots of others, there's one of the fitnas in there is that there becomes a bit of a competition sometimes, or a misunderstanding with others, or somebody's trying to be bigger than the others. That's sometimes an issue. And the Sheikh has to be very particular in trying to stop that cultish behavior from developing. In short, harmony and compatibility are conditional for a pledge. But a lot of people don't understand that. They just become bay'ah to somebody because everybody else is, or he's the biggest buzurg in town. We went to visit, mashallah, a great sheikh in Pakistan. I loved him. His demeanor, the du'as that he gives, really, really humble man. And heard stuff about him because I got another friend I know who had studied with him. And he never pushed it or anything. You know, he just, mashallah, spoke to us, showed us a few different things, gave us some kitabs. But his one guy is like, "Ab bait bhi ho jao in ke saath." I said, "Kyun?" He said, "You know, bait ho jao." You know, I said, "No, we don't do that just in a jam. I mean, how am I going to connect with him? Like, how many times am I going to, I need somebody that I can have access to." Yes, he's great. If I was here, I don't mind. He's a great person. Once somebody came to our shop, my dad was there and he spoke to him for a while. And then after I found out he's a modern or whatever, he goes, "Khatlao, paper." And he wrote Khilafat for him. So, okay, in the absence of the essential condition, like if you don't have compatibility, then mujahadat, strivings, certain forms of exercise designed to subdue the lower self, riyadat, meditations, muraqabat, and unveiling mukashafat are all futile. If you don't have congeniality and you got this garbar in your heart and problem in your heart with the Sheikh, then you're going to make all of these efforts because you're doing it supposedly under their watch. What they believe is that all of this came through the hearts of the mashayikh. So if you've got an issue and it's dirty in between, then it's all going to be messed up. If you're going to do riyadat, do it yourself then. But if you're going to do it under this, then you're not going to get much out of it. And if you do it separately, you may not get much either, depending on how you do it and what your issues are. So even if you are then seeing unveilings and mukashafat and kashf and so on, there's no point of it. In the absence of natural congeniality, what happens then? Right? You just can't find somebody that you just naturally incline to. It's not always easy. The disciple should endeavor to inculcate intellectual congeniality. Munasaba aqliya. Probably say more rational now, right? What that means is, because deriving benefit depends on it. What that means is that you have to force yourself to think of all of the good points and why you're benefiting, why you have congenial. Because you can't always get 100% congeniality anyway. You just have to do your best, right? For this reason, one should refrain from entering into the pledge until total congeniality is present. So try to make this up that, look, I is the best that I have. Any questions?
So, you know, obviously, Rasulullah SAW, his greatest like student, you could say, is Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu. And Abu Bakr radiallahu is known as a Siddiq, right? And even Minan Nabiyina was والصديقين والشهداء والصالحين. So yeah. You know the quality of Sidq is come before the shuhada and the salihin. So being salihin. Why is the what's so important about Sidq?
Siddiqin, what you have to understand is you have to understand what Siddiqiyya refers to. If you listen to the lectures on the Tasawwuf section of Kharida Bahiyya, which is online as the introduction to Tasawwuf, Sufism, or whatever it's called. So he explains the maqamat there, the maqams. So you start off with the maqams of Siddiq and Sabr and all of that. The highest maqam, which is the one that beyond it is Nubuwa, which you can't acquire. So the highest possible to acquire maqam is Siddiqiyya. That means absolute veracity. That means being a champion of truth, not just in what you say. See, a lot of people think that it's about what you say, right? But it's not about what you say. It's not just about what you say. It's actually about what you do. So you are totally truthful to Allah. And truthful to Allah means absolute sincerity. You could just say that Siddiqiyya is this ultimate form of sincerity for Allah and goodwill for Allah, where you are nothing, it's all for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Like being able to give all of your wealth away in the path of Allah and leaving your family literally in the hands of Allah. Not in a crazy way that I'm just going to give it and see what happens, but trust in Allah. So it incorporates, it goes beyond, it's beyond tawakkul. So he's not just speaking the truth, but it's actually being truthful in every aspect. That's Siddiqiyya. Of course, even within Siddiqiyya, they say is that it's multiple stages within that. And you can carry on going up. There's no end to Siddiqiyya because you're traveling to Allah and there's no, Allah is infinite. So there's no end to that, but you can never become a prophet. The prophets get that straight away. When they get it, they're already at the maqam of Siddiqiyya because it starts above that.
So you know the verse of the Quran, Rabbi adkhilni mudkhala sidq wa akhrijni mukhraja sidq. Is there a connection between?
How do they generally translate that? وَجَعَلْنِي مِنْ لَدُنْكَ سُلْطَانًا نَصِيرًا. It's a wonderful dua. It has to incorporate that. The way I do things, the way I come out of things, the way I leave things, all of that must be included in there.
But you know, this phrase of take the good and leave the bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're speaking to, let's say, someone, Awam, right? And you say this, take the good and leave the bad. So then people say, how do they know what the good is and how?
Exactly, you can't say that to everybody. Ulama generally use that. That's a ulama academic term, which they say, خُذْ مَا صَفَى وَدَعْ مَا قَدَرْ or دَعْ مَا قَدَرْ وَخُذْ مَا صَفَى. They generally say that regarding people like Zamakhshari, who's known to have contributed hugely, but then has aberrant positions based on his i'tizal. So that's more of an academic statement. You have to have that criteria. It's like, are we not allowed to touch it because it's so bad? Now, if you know what's wrong, then it's fine. You've got the criteria to understand that. And that's with anybody's view. You know, lots of people, not most, but lots of people have something that you may not agree with. And you may think is totally futile and wrong and maybe even corrupt. You can take the benefits.
The point of a lecture is to encourage people to act, to get further, an inspiration, an encouragement, persuasion. The next step is to actually start learning seriously, to read books, to take on a subject of Islam and to understand all the subjects of Islam, at least at their basic level, so that we can become more aware of what our deen wants from us. And that's why we started Rayyan courses, so that you can actually take organized lectures on demand whenever you have free time, especially, for example, the Islamic Essentials course that we have on there, the Islamic Essentials Certificate, which you take 20 short modules, and at the end of that, inshallah, you will have gotten the basics of most of the most important topics in Islam, and you'll feel a lot more confident. You don't have to leave lectures behind. You can continue to leave, to listen to lectures, but you need to have this more sustained study as well. Jazakallah khairan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.